So it is my distinct honor and very deep pleasure to welcome back Regina Sarah Ryan to Many Rivers Books and Tea. Regina was one of the speakers, the very earliest speakers in our program, Thursdays at Many Rivers program. Back in 2003, she came and spoke about the biography of her teacher's teacher, Yogi Ram Sarat Kumar, which had just been published at that time. It was a memorable event for myself, and I have had occasion to get to know her better, especially recently, and I cannot speak highly enough of her generosity, her sweetness of heart and expansiveness of heart, her wit and wisdom, her inspiration, and it is my great pleasure to hear her with you tonight speak about meetings with remarkable women. Thank you so much.
No, that's a great privilege. Thank you. Oh, my heart is beating after that beautiful introduction. Thanks so much.
Pour some tea for
you. Oh yeah, great.
It's tartary. That's what it is.
No, I was just going to tell you, it's tartary buckwheat tea.
Oh, I can smell it. It's really nice.
It's lovely.
You all know the story of Paul Reps drinking a cup of tea. Yeah. Wonderful story. Paul Reps was a poet, a writer, a serious Zen practitioner, and a little guy about 5 feet tall, maybe less. And he lived out of his backpack, traveling all over the world. And he was just an ambassador of peace and goodness and spiritual practice. This is supposed to be about remarkable women, but as far as I'm concerned, we're talking about something that transcends gender. We're talking about the spirit of Ma, which is not about mommy. It's about the spirit of the feminine, which embraces the earth as its body and its own child. And so Paul Reps is a remarkable example of that. And he got to he had been in Japan. And I get the details mixed up. But anyway, here's the story. He has a visa that's supposed to get him into, I guess, Japan. And he is denied the passage in because there has been some, maybe it's the war, maybe it's, you know, something particular at that particular moment. And he's really, really disappointed. And the man at the visa can't stamp it because everybody's been denied passage in at this particular time. And so he says, well, he'll wait. And so he goes over and he starts writing. And he's waiting and waiting. And then they change shifts and a different person is there issuing visas, and he approaches the counter and asks if his visa can be approved, and the man looks at him and, you know, asks him about his situation and refuses him, and he goes back and he opens up his little thermos and he starts drinking his cup of green tea. And so the man is watching him from the visa counter, and he calls him over and he says, you know, what's going on? Why are you still waiting here? You know, I've told you can't get in. And he, at that point, hands him the little paper that he has just been writing as he's sitting there. And on the paper it says, drinking a cup of green tea, I stop the war. And it's a true story. The visa, the man at the visa counter actually stamped his visa and allowed him to enter. Mm-hmm. So forgive the fact that my details are a little off, you know, and as far as where he was going and what time and what was the situation, but that was the piece that he wrote. And it was enough to touch the heart and allow him passage to a place that had been closed to him. Maybe you could post that over your, as a banner above your tea house. Drinking a cup of green tea, I stopped the war. Isn't that the way of Ma, the way of Mother? The mother is there for her children, and her children are not necessarily physical. Her children are maybe the earth. Her children may be her art. Her children may be animals. They're not necessarily her children of her own body. And for me, when I present programs based on my book, The Woman Awake, I'm talking about the feminine spirit, the spirit of which in Hinduism is the Ma, which transcends gender. And so I have 24 remarkable women whose stories intersect with my own story. But one of those 24 remarkable feminine spirits is the Dalai Lama. And, I could write many others about males who embody that. And that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in what that that heart on fire is that allows her to take incredible risks and to be fierce and to cut off a hand if it's necessary to save a life, as well as that tenderness of heart that does not want anything to be damaged. One of the women I write about in my book is a German woman named Dina Reis, who most people have never heard of. She's not famous. But she was the mother of 11 adopted children. She was a medical doctor who worked in Bangladesh during the time of the tremendous famines there. And she literally quickly ran out of medical supplies when she got there. And so she would take mud, and leaves, and she would hold them, and she would bless them, and she would use them as medicine for people. And they would be healed because of her faith and her ability to imbue this with the power of love. And when I met her, she was probably a little younger than me at the time. She's dead now. She sat with a group of us for about 4 hours, and we talked about the many journeys she'd had, the many teachers she'd had. But meanwhile, she'd get up every 20 minutes or so, because either the phone would ring, it would be somebody calling her from all over the world asking her for advice or counsel, or she'd be in the kitchen making little snacks for us. So in 4 hours, we must have had about 6 different snack breaks, and one of the snack breaks was ice cream, and then about 40 minutes later we'd have saltine crackers with cheese spread. I mean, it was Ma. This was the spirit of the Divine Mother. This is the spirit of the feminine spirit, which is in males or females, in which the nurturance, the milk of human kindness, the nurturance was being poured upon us. And her greatness as a woman was so tangible in the story of her life. And I was sitting there listening to her talk, and especially listening to her laugh. And as I was watching her, I kept thinking, I know this woman. She is so familiar. Now, she's a German woman. I'd never seen her before in my life. And then what I recognized was that I kept getting this visual hallucination where my own face was being superimposed on hers. And I kept thinking, she looks just like me. And that's the truth. She looked just like me. It's very, very important to have a god or a ma, a saint, a role model, a great lover who can open you to the level at which their love is, and you recognize that you're not separate from that. That's what all the great, all teachers are really attempting to be for us, is that possibility, that emptiness, such that the full presence of what they are attuned to is opened in us. And it's no wonder that we see their face. We see our own face on their face, because that is the truth. It's the real truth. Whew, that was fun. Thanks, Dina. So I went back when I was writing the book. I went back. I'll put this down because I'll just get in my way. I went back there to Freiburg, Germany, after she had died, and I spoke to her students, and I said, "What was the essence of Dina's message?" And they said, "The essence of Dina's teaching is that everyone must become mother, male or female. Everyone must become mother." And this is important to me. I'm a woman who has not borne children in her physical body, but I am a mother. And my male friends, my husband, you know, they must become mother in the truest sense of the word, what that means. And that is, that's what we're talking about, the feminine spirit, the feminine spiritual path. It's not mother in a sense of any kind of restricted homemaker, although many of us have taken that on as the path of the home. But it is the path of the mother to life, the nurturing mother to life. So she's a great inspiration to me. I'll tell you why I picked this goddess tonight. Well, first of all, you have to know I was a Roman Catholic nun. So I'm a little partial to her. This is Mary Guadalupe, the goddess of North and South America. So I'm sure some of you know who she is. And for others, she may be a new friend. Do you know her story? Wonderful story. Whether it's true or not, it's magnificent. But there's an actual physical document that exemplifies it. This image is cast from a picture that appears on cloth and is in the cathedral in Mexico City. And I'll tell you the story. It was in the 1600s, I guess. God, my details are terrible.
1500s.
15.
Just a few years after the conquest by Cortes.
Yes. Yeah. And this peasant, Juan Diego, is climbing a hill outside the city. And he sees this dazzling light, and he goes over, and there's this magnificent, radiant young woman, pregnant young woman, who says to him, "I want you to build me a cathedral, a shrine here, so that all can come and worship the mother." And he's shocked. And he says, "Well, who do I ask?" And she says, "Well, just go down and ask the bishop." And he says, "Well, the bishop will never even let me in the door." And she says, "Go over that hill there." And she said, "On the other side of that hill, you'll find something that will convince the bishop to let you in." So he climbs the hill, and it was December, and he climbs the hill, and on the other side of the hill, there's a field of roses, full blossom. He picks the roses, wraps them in his serape, and heads down to the cathedral, or the town, the church, to speak to the bishop. Goes in to visit the bishop after much, you know, having to debate his way in. They let him come in, and he says, "The Mother of Jesus, the Mother of God, has appeared to me and told me that I should tell you that you should build a shrine up on top of the hill." And Bishop's like, And he's, you know, is ready to throw the man out, and the man says, well, she gave me something to give you. And he opens his serape, and the roses fall on the ground. And he's convinced that the bishop's going to be really impressed. And the bishop, meanwhile, is looking at him with an amazed look. And Juan Diego's looking back at the bishop like he's not even looking at the roses. And what the bishop was looking at is that on the inside of the serape was an imprint of this one, exactly like that. A blue cloak with stars, and the actual stars, they found now that the stars are formed in a constellation that was in the sky the day on which she appeared. That was the pattern, that's the pattern of the stars on her cloak, that she's pregnant. And that she is, she's standing on a, this has her standing on a little angel. I don't know whether that was the case, but she was standing on the moon, a crescent moon. And that you can still see that. It's there. It's really there. And people come and they pilgrimage from all over. They pilgrimage on their knees sometimes. They get as far as, you know, several miles away, and they begin to progress there on their knees, singing her praises, the praises of the mother, the praises of the goddess. So, you know, anthropologically you can find that she came in on the heels of a goddess worship that had preceded her, because many times that happened, you know, where one culture superimposed its images on another. But nonetheless, she's the goddess of our country, and the one that is invoked and believed and, you know, honored and celebrated. And you know, I don't even need to know that was really a true story or not. I mean, I saw the image. I was flabbergasted, actually. Not the image, the actual serape. But what it showed me was the power of the mother to awaken faith, longing, discipline, dedication, passion, to ignite the inner fire of vast numbers of human beings, men and women. We need our myths. We need our stories of our saints. We need these you know, remarkable human beings to give us some kind of a connection to mystery, which is so easily lost. So easily lost. We are, you know, we're reading about subatomic particle physics, and we're reading about consciousness studies, and we're reading about space, things that are found in space exploration and all of that, and we're just like, you know, channeling it through this tiny little channel of our logical rationality and our myths and the stories of our saints and the lives of Dina Reese, who takes dirt and makes medicine. We need this. We need this to bring us out of a very rational, you know, right brain consciousness ruling the world. So Ma, or the divine feminine, or the feminine principle, or these remarkable women, are that for us. There are opportunities to, you know, have a little brain switch here and begin to look at life from the perspective of what if, you know, what if from the time you were a child you were never shamed for defecating or peeing or whatever, you know, I mean, people still do that to the elderly in hospitals and in old age homes. Naughty, naughty. You did a dirty. You know, I mean, we're still doing that to our children, not necessarily you, but the collective we are still shaming our children and shaming our elders for our bodies and our normal human functioning. What if you had been raised with a circle of wise women to nurture you? Men and women, what if you had been raised in a circle of wise grandmothers? So that when one was having a hard time, she could just say, "Here, you know, love him up." No? Is it too late for that? I say no, it's not too late. It's not too late. And that the asking of the what if is that question of how can we enliven her, or that one, that energy body, which is already present in all of us, men and women. And one of the ways that we can do that, one of my mentors was a woman named Joan Halifax Roshi, who's a Zen Roshi. And I asked her how we become men and women of spiritual power. And she said, through suffering and through great role models. And of course, the suffering she was talking about was not the suffering of complaint and neurotic, you know, kvetching. It was the suffering of open-eyed viewing of the human condition. Our own woundedness, and that of others. Mother of the earth, mothers have to keep their eyes wide open. You ever see moms on a playground? That's the spirit that's the spiritual path. That's the path of enlivening the feminine in male and female. And then the great role models. Yeah, whatever we're seeing, you know, I was sitting with Ginny today in a meeting, and I was thinking, God, she's great. I was, you know, right? Don't deny it. It's the truth. I was thinking, God, she's great. You know, she's like, her being is radiant. Her being vibrates, and that, you know what? You know what happens when you meet someone like that, male or female. What happens in you? Well, for some of us, what happens is, she's great, I'm bad. Mm-hmm. You know, she's better than me, I'm lower than her. But if that voice wasn't the first, you know, wasn't the one we clung to, if we just simply recognize that voice is, that comes in, but we went beyond that and we recognized what it was that she had stirred in me. She stirred my own passion for life. She stirred my greatness. She stirred the love. She stirred the embers of my heart. We are that. We are already that. There's a beautiful Sufi poem. It's actually a song. If I had a tape deck, I could play it for you, but I don't have it on CD, and you can't find it anywhere. I probably have the last copy on planet Earth with this tape. But it goes something like this. I have heard stories of slaves who wept with fear when told by their masters that their day of freedom was near. And I have seen cages with gold and silver bars. I've also seen prisoners who gazed at the stars. There is within us all a thirst for the stars, a search for what was and shall be again. There is within us all a limitless space, a state of grace, and the light of the sun. I have been guided by images and dreams. Sometimes I can't follow, afraid of what I've seen. Let's see. I have felt unworthy for that door to open to me, but then I remembered that I held the key. There is within us all a thirst for the stars, a search for what was and shall be again. There is within us all a limitless space, a state of grace, and the light of the sun. So our poets and our artists are constantly enlivening that power for us, causing us to come home and causing us to remember and causing us to question that logical approach to life, to existence. So I'll pause for a moment, see if anybody has any questions so far. See where we're going to go from here.
Do you have the name of the poet of that poem or that song?
That I just read? Mm-hmm. Well, it's some unknown Sufi, contemporary Sufi person who wrote it on an album that was called The Heart Has Its Meaning, and the name of it comes out of a little Sufi monastery up in upstate New York called the Abode of the Message. Do you know of it? You ever hear of it?
Have initiation in the Sufi order.
Oh, of course then. Yeah. New Lebanon, from New Lebanon. So that's where it comes from. So I have a copy of the tape, but I don't think you can find it anymore. Yeah. So my book, I think I'll tell you a little bit about the story of that. I didn't have that many role models. I had to find them myself. I had to create a lineage of mothers who I could stand with them at my back. Because many of us, our mothers were crippled in that domain. They didn't have that kind of connection to their own source. Many of them did, and we're really blessed if that's the truth, but many of them didn't. Many of them did not. And so it was necessary for me to find this lineage of mother and connect with that energy that was so essential for me. I had been raised, of course, in a very strict Catholic home, and I have great gratitude for that, and great gratitude for the fact that I became a nun, because it was just fantastic training. But also I had a very limited view of this one, of this the only essential feminine in the hierarchy, and she still kind of had second place. You know, it was God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost, and Mary. I went to Romania 3 years ago for the first time. Been going back next month again, but my third time. And I got such a fabulous, fabulous, you know, mental reorganization there. Because what I saw in a monastery about 7 hours north of the city of Bucharest was an icon, a painting, of Mary lying dead on a table, and the apostles and angels all surrounding her, holding cloths in their hands and weeping over her dead body. Well, first of all, in Catholicism, we didn't get that Mary really died. We got that she ascended into heaven, and so you see these wonderful images in the Vatican, you know, and in Italy, of the Virgin ascending on clouds with the angels flying up, you know, to support her. Very important, this iconography, because what it says about who we are and how necessary it is to have an embodied spirituality. So there she is, she's dead. Okay, that's the first shock. And standing over her is Jesus. Well, he was already dead before she left. You know, he'd been crucified. So in the image, he's standing over her, and he's got in his arms a baby girl, and he's holding her in the same posture in which you see the Madonna holding the child. So it's the Madonna and child, but it's Jesus holding his mother, Mary, as an infant. Well, that's not even the most astounding part of this whole thing. At the very top of the icon, there's this huge body of the mother. Mother Mary, this huge body of the mother with her arms spread out like as if she's holding the whole earth, and she's looking down and holding everything. So there's three images of Mary in this icon. She's died. She's taken into the arms of her son as an infant, because now she's entered as an infant into a new level of existence. And she's going to be trained in this transformational work, this transformational process that she's in now, so that she can assume the fullness of her life forever, which is that of the transcendent, all-embracing Divine Mother. Isn't that great? It's totally great. Totally great, because it brings into, you know, it just turns the mind around at what's the possibility of this kind of understanding of devotion, of what our religious traditions may have lost by solidifying them into a very kind of small box. And for me, it was just so celebratory, because the feast day that celebrates that particular moment in which she's taken by her son is my birthday. So it's like the biggest feast in Romania is August 15th. So here I am. So I needed a different view, and this is one of the ways I got it, was my trip to Romania. And I got a lot of different views when I went to India as well. So I've been on the trail of this mother energy, this mother spirit, and I needed to. And when I left the convent and was found by my spiritual teacher, he encouraged me. He actually introduced me, both physically, as he introduced me to Dina Reese, and through giving me images of the Divine Feminine, into what it could be to really explore these women of grace and power. And so that's what I've tried to develop in the book, is the many, many different faces that she has. She's not just the sweet Madonna. No. She's also the wild, passionate, ferocious goddess Kali, who cuts off the heads of illusion. she has to, because, and we know this because we've all got these sides, you know, male or female, we've got this. We've got our nurturance and we've got our fierceness. And she's also the artist, very much the artist. And she's the wild woman. She's the political activist. Each one of these many faces is one important aspect of this divine feminine. And it's really, really important that we get a really broad view of who she is and how we can absorb from her and enliven within ourselves this aspect that we're needing to work on in our own being. Okay, there's another pause. Oh my God, goodness, the time is going quickly. Yes.
I was in Turkey a few years ago, and I went to this little house, and they said that this was where Mary had lived out her last days.
Yes.
You know that little house?
No, I haven't been to that, but I know of it. It's, mm-hmm. Yes.
And you know, I didn't really have any expectations when I went in. But I had never sort of, in the same way, thought of her in terms of her, how she would have spent her last days.
Yeah.
You know, it just, that never occurred to me. And it was just a very simple little house. And when you walked in, there was a nun, and she was singing a cappella, just some hymn. And we all just walked in. It was really quite small, you know. We just walked in, there was a statue, and we walked out. And then you came down a really long hill, and there were fountains of water all the way down, and you were supposed to drink from each of the fonts on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
All I know is I walked in one way and I walked out another.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I had no, it was nothing mental. There was no idea of it.
No.
It was only like something happened between the front and the back door.
Yeah.
Something amazing happened.
Yeah. People tell me that story going to Medjugorje in Croatia, in Bosnia, yes it is. And that, you know, you go, my teacher died, and now we have his tomb, mm-hmm. is up on the hillside, not so far from where I live, near my house. And people in our community now go there. And if they haven't been there before, they'll go there and they'll sit there, and then they'll come down after being up there for an hour or so, and they'll just go, wow, that was amazing, you know? And I go, really? And they go, yeah, it was really amazing. And, I mean, these places of sanctuary, these places that are like these little cracks in the cosmic egg, you know, where we have the possibility to sit, we have the possibility to listen, we have the possibility to stop, we have the possibility to open to another type of energy, and where real magic and mystery is contained. And it really does, it cuts through
everything.
It cuts through everything. Yeah, it really cuts through everything. And the wonderful thing is it gives us a point of reference. Like my remembrance of seeing my face on Dina's face, I'll never forget that as long as I live. And in the midst of the frazzle of everyday life, I can simply say to myself, you know, I am not separate from that one. I am not separate from that one. That tiny moment of remembrance brings me back to a huge possibility, because she was huge. She was that one. She was that one. And I think that's the same for men and women. I think we can all reconnect to, I am not separate from that one. Jim?
You mentioned just in passing the Virgin of Guadalupe being the goddess of the Americas.
Yes.
North and South America.
Yes.
And I just never had heard it put, you know, like quite that way.
Oh, yeah.
I heard her referred to as the the goddess of Mexico, for example.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you could sort of elaborate on that. You know, what does it mean to be the goddess of a region? Or how do you understand that? I'm very intrigued by that.
Well, I mean, I have to talk in sort of twilight poetic language to make sense of that. You know, I mean, I can't plead my case in court or anything.
I won't hold you to standard.
Yeah, but truthfully, it seems that at different periods in history, and at different periods of necessity, that that cracks have occurred. The cracks do occur, you know. The fault opens up a little bit, and that various, you know, intersections of the worlds show up at different times and places, and the fact that in our own day we have this in Bosnia, in Croatia, in Medjugorje. And I'm only talking about one aspect of this divine feminine. I'm using the Virgin Mary as that mother force. It's not to say that the appearance of Kuan Yin has not been, you know, as dominant as this one, but this one I know a lot more about. So I think that what was, if I were to put a story to it, you know, what was necessary was to bring this new world into her arms, and to give, you know, to give us in this culture the Virgin Mary, the Mother, the Divine Mother, in our own language, in our own, you know. We weren't yet ready, I guess. We didn't have a place yet where there was enough faith, perhaps, to hold that. But there was enough. There was obviously a faith, a raw faith, that was able to hold what she had there. There is in Romania still, I must tell you. I went to a city called now I can't remember. It's something Romanian though. Had a Romanian, and the city was essentially 600 women, all wearing, dressed as nuns. They were all nuns, and they were from young to old, and they had been practicing there for hundreds and hundreds of years. They weren't hundreds of years old, but I mean the tradition has been there. And in the year 2009, there were 600 of them practicing and chanting the name of God from morning till night. And so the whole entire village was resounding with the chant. So it must have the same power that great Zen monasteries have had. You know, I mean, they literally are, they must be vibrating energies that are influencing the energy of the earth. I mean, the fact that we're still all around with what we've got going is pretty remarkable. Yeah.
When you were in India, did you encounter anything about Sri Anandamayi Ma?
Oh, yes.
Well, I visited her ashram, the North American ashram, which is in the Big Island of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And those were such loving people.
Yeah.
And there was such love up there.
Yeah.
And I have read her biography and visited them twice now.
Yeah, yeah. She's one of my great ma's.
I wonder if she might be in your
yeah,
book.
Yes, she is.
Good.
Well, no, actually, she's not in my
book.
But I have materials that I use in my workshop this weekend about her, because she is that. She's really remarkable. The other one that's remarkable, if any of you have seen her, is Amma. I mean, there's a crack in the cosmic egg. You know, how can a person sit there, day after day, night after night, holding and hugging and attending to thousands and thousands and thousands of people with personal attention? You know, transcending her, the limitations of what the physical body of what anyone could endure, and doing it with absolute attention on everything else that's happening in the room all at the same time. You see that, you simply see that, you sit in the presence of that, and something is awakened in you. You're never going to do that. I'm not going to do that. It's not the point. The point is that spirit, that divinity pervades creation. Love pervades creation. And that's the enlivenment that happens for us with these. Yes?
I have a question about that painting in Romania.
Yes.
Do you know how old is it? Is it somewhat contemporary? Is it middle ages?
No, it's not only is it in Romania, it was so amazing. My sister went to Georgia, Russia, and she took photographs in churches in Russia that had been desecrated. In Romania, they're not desecrated. They're really still intact. But in Georgia, they were desecrated. She took this picture, another picture of the same icon in Georgia. It's in Greece as well. This is the cosmology of the Orthodox Christian Church in Romania, in Russia, in Greece. It's like their whole doctrine. It's a whole different view, because that there's not that same degree of there's huge patriarchy, but the essential teaching, the mystery teaching, is that it's the mother, that it is the mother spirit. You know, it's like there's too many churches in under one church. You know, there's a church that's very, very patriarchal, and what is necessary to enliven in all of our churches, religious congregations, any spiritual schools, what we are all required to reanimate is Ma, is the feminine, to bring the feminine spirit into whatever practice we have. I mean, I've seen images of some of these Zen masters, and you look at their face and you don't even know if it's a male or a female, because the radiant joy of that being is so great. And it's there in a body that's highly disciplined and is sitting in such absolute, beautiful alignment with the flow of existence. And that's the embodiment of that feminine spirit in a male body. Did you have more to ask or say?
Tell us something about some other people in your book.
Well, I really can't go too much further because we only have 2 more minutes.
Oh. But if you could get a few more minutes,
we can go longer.
We can go a little longer.
Did you see the Black Madonna?
I have seen the Black Sarah. Mm. Have you ever heard of her? She's in a tiny little church in the south of France called Saint-Marie de la Mer. And here's the story. I didn't really realize I was going to talk all about Christian imagery tonight, but we'll go for it because it's okay. But the story goes that after the death of Jesus, Mary, the mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, okay, we know who she is, and their cousin, Mary of Cleophas, were taken in a boat from the Holy Land across the Mediterranean and were landed safely in the south of France, where they established their, So I know we've got a shrine to her that says that's where she lived in Turkey, but we also have them in France.
She was everywhere.
She was everywhere. Everybody wants to claim her, and everybody has a shrine that says this is where she was. And some people have her skull, and some people have... she has at least 4 or 5 arms, in different cities. They do. They really do. I mean, these relics, it's really funny. So anyway, not only did those three Marys go there, so the story goes, but they brought along a servant who was a black young Egyptian whose name was Sarah Al-Khali. Sarah Al-Khali means Sarah the Black. Well, isn't that interesting that her name was Kali? And so they landed there and they established a residence, and Sarah was their attendant. Well, then they all died, or they went to Turkey, or they went to wherever they went to. Mary Magdalene in the cave, and she became really great. And, you know, so the story goes, she had the baby, and it was Jesus' baby. But well, we won't go into that. But Sarah was adopted by the gypsies as their goddess. She was black, and she was their sacred mother. And so they enshrined her in the crypt, in the basement of the church the Church of the Three Marys. Mm-hmm. And she has a shrine in a cave underneath the church, and they dress her in she's a black statue, and she's dressed in magnificent robes. They put on different clothes and beautiful jewels on her hair and everything every day. And gypsies from all over Europe, actually, you know, from all over Eastern Europe, from Europe, journeyed there, pilgrimage there, and adore the mother, adore this divine manifestation of the mother in the form of the black Sarah. And when I went there with my teacher Lee, he was great. He took us to so many wonderful places. This is part of his work with us. He took us there, and we sat down there, and people have come there, and they've left their crutches, and they've left their, you know, canes and things. They've been healings that have happened there, just like they've happened in many, many shrines around the world, whatever that means. But two people that I know, two independent accounts told me. One is a Tibetan Rinpoche named Trakhtum Dorje, and the other is the author of a book called Longing for Darkness. Her name is China Galland. Both of them report having seen a gypsy man going and worshipping at the feet of Sarah Al-Khali, and then putting his hands up under her robes and just embracing the statue as if he was just making love to her. And in both cases, the way they describe it, I know exactly what that was. You know, I mean, it's a mode of adoration that was beyond something sexual. It was the mode of adoration that was just to touch, physically touch, tangibly connect with, you know, the body of the beloved, the body of mother. So this feminine spirit is not just the woman, you know, ascending on the clouds. She's the gypsy, you know, whose body is full and voluptuous and
my cell phone is ringing.
Now that's got to be the worst thing that's ever happened. Hello? Incoming call. Wouldn't that be awful if you actually answered and said, hi? You know, everybody say hi.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Is the black Sarah the same as the black Madonna? Is that same figure in the story?
Well, there are many black Madonnas, and some of them are considered to have been black because the original statue was maybe was marred or burned accidentally. And some of them are black just because that's the way in which they were created. I mean, there's all different stories of which ones. There's one There's one in Texas.
Well, the one that's on the island in France, I saw that so many years ago. I can't remember story that it was that surrounded it, but but I remember buying a postcard that said the Black Madonna.
Yeah. Well, there's many there's many different ones, and she shows up in many different countries. But the Sarah, I'm speaking of her as if she's the Black Madonna, because for me they're not separate.
Right.
But she's technically not her. She's technically the the gypsy queen, the servant.
Yeah.
Aren't stories good? Good story. Aren't these good stories? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really good. Well, we need stories. We need stories to bring us into a domain of this mystery, to enliven and awaken within us.
I'm not gonna give up.
So I'll tell you one more story, and then we'll close. Near my home, there's a Tibetan monastery, and the Rinpoche there is named Garchen Rinpoche, and he spent 20 years in a Chinese re-education camp, in which he tells incredible stories about that. He said he went in an angry young monk, and 20 years later he came out loving everybody. he said it was such a huge source of suffering, but also something that made the Dharma, the teaching, so precious to him. There was an older monk in the monastery with him, and every day they would march one group through the courtyard while the other group was coming in the other direction, and they would position themselves so they'd be on the outside of the lines. And as he would pass the elder monk would whisper, you know, in the time it took to walk past him, he would whisper a few lines, a few words, and that would be Garchen's meditation that he would work with and practice. And but he told a story, or someone who was there at the conference told me the story, that a woman came to him at a conference there in Chino Valley, Arizona, and she said, "I'm dying. I've been given 6 months to live, and what should I practice for these 6 months?" And he said to her, "Contemplate sacred images." He said, "You need to see images that awaken you to your true nature. Gaze upon sacred images and allow them to awaken you to who you truly are, because this body is the guest house, and it's time to leave the guest house and to go home." So that's the story I'll leave you with. That is what can awaken this, awaken our true nature. And whether we are male or female, we can be awakened by green Tara. We can be awakened by white Tara. We can be awakened by Anandamayi Ma. We can be awakened by Amma, by Mary, by Dina Reese, by Ginny. We don't have any images at Divine bronzes of you yet, do we, Jean?
Dance pictures.
Oh, that's good. Well, yeah. I mean, have you ever seen some of those awesome pictures of Isadora Duncan and Ruth St. Dennis and some of these women dressed as the Madonna? Have you ever seen them do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, you know, you see that. Like, I get awakened by my friend Deborah, who sings the blues, who's like, you know, 240 pounds, and she just like sings the blues, and every ounce of flesh on her body is alive with life. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, completely alive. And I sit there and I like go, "Oh my God, I'm stretched." You know, I'm totally stretched by that kind of divine imagery. And I know, you know, as men, you can relate to that, that you can relate to being enlivened, you know, in the most exalted and you know, grounded way by that power of the divine, of the feminine, divine and human, all together. Well, you've been very gracious allowing me to talk on and on and on. Thank you so much for your attention. I've got a bunch of books I've written. I've written The Woman Awake, which is woo-hoo, great. And I've written a book called Praying Dangerously, Radical Reliance on God,
And I'm going to say something about this. This is the new edition, the 10th anniversary edition, revised and expanded. But we also have a few copies of the original edition. Tonight, only 30% off for those. For those there. It's a wonderful, it's one of my favorite books, that first edition. And yes. So it's wonderful.
There was a book of mine is in the front window. It's called Igniting the Inner Life. Is it there? Yeah.
Hello.
That's that tells about my pilgrimage in Romania.
Great book.
And then we have some books by my teacher, or about my teacher, or about his master, my teacher Lee Loswick. We have a book on enlightened duality, which is actually one of my all time favorite book.
It's a fantastic book.
You know, I mean, enlightenment in duality. We live in duality, and how do we bring that enlightenment into this daily grind of everything? Family life, business, you know, parenting, art, music, a creative expression, it's money and devotion. So I'm happy to give you anything else you want to know about those. I also brought along something that I won't leave here because I don't want them posted around, but in Arizona where I live, I do help direct what's known as Triveni Retreat Center, which is a retreat center where for serious practitioners. It's not a weekend retreat center. But if you want to do a solitary retreat of your own design, it's not like anything you do with groups of people, but it's a solitary retreat centers with individual residences and have all your wonderful meals provided at your door by a little fairy who comes and knocks at your door and then they run away and you're all alone for weeks or a month or more if you want, depending upon how brave you are.
Yeah.
And we do have rattlesnakes and scorpions and well, we do. We actually do, but they won't bother you. So that's here if anybody's seriously interested. It's not something we post, but I'm happy to tell you about it. And
I have the pleasure of reminding you or letting you know, if it's the first time that you've heard this, that Regina is going to be over at Tayu House on Saturday and Sunday conducting this same name seminar for men and women on a spiritual path, Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 1. And if you are interested in finding out more about that or signing up, you can contact me after the talk, or Stuart, or Alan back over there, Anne right over there. So, by all means, I highly, highly encourage it. I have been stretched tonight in the way that Regina was talking about, and I have no doubt that we can stretch more this weekend. And I'm looking forward to it myself. So, thank you so much. That was really, 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 really
cool. How many reallys?
I could dance to show you how really wonderful it was. Oh,
my pleasure, really.
Thank you.
We have, in addition to all these incredible books and these posters and people available to talk about the seminar, we also have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to that which we share with our speakers to further their work, and retain some to maintain this space. And if you know someone who's interested in Orca, we encourage you to spread the word.
You should mention that how your house is south of Sebastopol.
That's about three miles south of here. So
Nearby.
We're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. It's not like a holy thing.
Inspiring.
A holy stretch.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming.
I enjoyed that very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming. You're so present for me.
Speaking of La Virgen, I'm involved with the Dances of Universal Peace, or I have been for this time. One of our circles in the South Bay area, I think Santa Cruz, I had somebody come into the dance meeting on one occasion, and she had just returned from her home in this area where the story originated.
Yes.
And she brought the song, which is what the one they sing every year on the anniversary. Are you familiar with it?
I sung it when I was down there. I did a seminar like this with women in Mexico City a couple times. And so they taught me, and I taught them my song, because they taught me their song.
It's great to resurrect that in your seminar, have people like dance some of the flamingos, the carrying of the roses, and the
agave.
It's great. It just became quite alive for me as you talked.
My husband and one of our housemates just built me a cottage, not adjoining our house, but just on the same property as my house, because as a writer, I've been needing a good office for way too long. So they finally finished it, and I named it Guadalupe Cottage. So now I have my little shrine for the mother.
Yes, you can.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Stuart's mother.
Oh, you are.
And Rob's mother-in-law.
Oh, how great.
They've spoken of you so highly so often. I'm not going to be able to come to your seminar because I went on a pilgrimage a year ago to England to visit cathedrals and study Celtic Christianity in the South England. And they're having a big reunion Saturday.
Yes, of course.
And then Sunday I'm ushering at church.
Yes.
And so I can't.
Oh, it's great to meet you. You were also so enlivening.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's your first name?
Betty.
Betty.
Betty Goodnick, just like Stuart.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, so I know you'll have a great time.
Well, thank you.
Have you been there? Have you seen their sanctuary?
It's wonderful.
I don't know how far along it is now, whether they've completed it or not.
Very beautiful.
It's going to be very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be in there all weekend.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again.
Well, thank you, Betty.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Let's go to the Donna Bowl now.
Yeah.
It's a little something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That was lovely. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure,
Dan. Yeah. You do a good job doing it. really beautiful. Yeah.
I'm going to Ohio, and I teach a 7-day session there, and I was going to bring a white tara for the dachshund private interview room, but I also decided after the talk with some others. I have plenty of images here to decide
you
over next
do.
Week.
You really
just
do.
Another, maybe a Valuto or another something. Like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe the retreat can have a flavor. Because sometimes then it's very masculine.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but it also has this other just complete openness and spaciousness and acceptance. You know, that it's very. Inspired me. You give it a little twist there.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Is your name just Daniel?
Daniel, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We can front you, buddy.
You know the old fashioned blotters that you used to have for your pen?
I
have a real pen, but I haven't used it in a couple days, so it's all so I'll have to keep this a little bit open until it's all dry. Great. Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
You know that one? Yeah.
No.
You haven't heard that one?
No, I never.
It's a Basque.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's a Basque folk song, actually. So there's more verses.
Oh, very
nice. I wanted to show that.
Thank you.
I just got a nice Mother's Day gift.
Oh,
and I thought
how
you
nice.
Might autograph. I requested it.
Oh, thank you, Betty. Is it
B-E-T-T-Y?
B-E-T-T-Y.
I was terrified.
I'm very interested in embodying love, the mother love.
Yes.
I'm in a community where I can, I'm in a retirement community where I can use this.
You can.
And do.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
Thank you.
That's why.
You know, this whole idea of like sitting with and sitting in front of the statue, the image, the icon, whatever. I mean, it's not just about getting the mental. It's actually letting that thing, that image, penetrate the cells of your body, your heart. And really
much into
feel that.
Mystical Christianity.
Yes,
where I am.
Yes, me too. Me too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was nice.
Well, you're going to like
this book. I think it's the one. I've been looking at are they all
sealed? But I mean, that's a specific
No.
You're very welcome, my dear. It's really a pleasure. Yes, you have to blow.